From New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Word of Mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott. Humans are vastly more social than most other mammals. Neuroscientists point to the development of our social brain as key to the survival of the species. Early humans survived by cooperating with each other in the rearing of children, by hunting in bands, by organizing night watches. A battery of research reveals that people still need people. Long-lasting loneliness not only makes you sick, it can kill you, writes the New Republic's Judith Shulevitz in a cover story out this week called The Lethality of Loneliness. And Judith is on the line to talk about some of the very real and fatal psychobiological consequences of social isolation. Judith Shulevitz, great to have you back on Word of Mouth.
Thank you, Virginia. It's great to be back.
It is tremendously sad to read about this condition of loneliness and its devastating effects on the brain and body and genes, though. I'd like to start, however, with a psychological definition of real loneliness.
Well, that comes from, it actually comes from a psychoanalyst about 50, 60 years ago who wrote an absolutely marvelous essay. Her name was Frieda Fromm Reichman, and she actually became famous because she was the psychoanalyst in I Never Promised You Rose Garden, which you may have read when you were young.
In high school.
Exactly. And she came up with this idea that real loneliness is not just, you know, feeling alone in a crowd, not having quite enough friends, being stuck at home alone for a few months while with some kind of medical condition while your friends go out and play. It's not even just sort of the existential isolation that, you know, we talk about as a product of civilization. Real loneliness is profound cutoffness and emotional unreachability, and she associated it with mental illness. And now psychology has become much more biological, and it's associated with a host of physical conditions, which over time can indeed kill you.
What are some of those conditions?
Well, one of the things that's interesting about this kind of loneliness is that our body reacts as if it were in fight or flight mode. So to be truly cut off from others means that you're in this kind of state of hyper-alertness, and your body reacts with these adrenaline responses, which wind up through a series of complicated hormonal cascades, causing inflammation of your tissues, particularly of some of your arteries. And this can lead to high blood pressure, which can lead to heart disease. So one thing that happens, one thing you're highly at risk for if you're a truly lonely person, is heart disease. Also, related diseases like diabetes. In the old, it can produce higher cognitive decline and faster cognitive decline. There's really quite a large range of disorders that loneliness can either cause if it's really lifelong, or exacerbate if it's, you know, situational, like as happens with the very old.
Well, you go through a lot of data on who are the lonely. So the question is, like, is loneliness, if it's want of intimacy, if a key part of it is feeling lonely or rejected, is it diagnosable? I mean, is it characterized as a psychological or a biological disease?
Well, more and more, the distinction between those two is disappearing, I'd have to say. You make a point I should have made in my last comment, which is that real loneliness, as more and more people define it, is this emotion and not a social condition, right? So there's one school of thought that says it's a failure of social networks, you don't have enough people to take care of you, and you die faster. That may be true, but what the psychologists today are talking about is this emotion, which sort of amazingly produces this whole slew of physiological effects. One of the effects that it produces is this feeling of being rejected, which produces the fight or flight response.
So that is hardwired into our biology, right? I mean, this is something that early humans experienced, fight or flight. I'd love to hear you expand on that concept of the social brain and why we survived.
So we were small. We were easily preyed upon. We didn't run as fast as our predators. There was a fair amount of competition between tribes. And we needed to band together. We needed to work together. We survived better in groups. So people who had a well honed defense mechanism, which kicked into gear when they found themselves alone, were more likely to survive than people who didn't have that.
Mm.
So, you know, if you are the kind of person who, say, cheated, right?
Right.
And got yourself kicked out of your group because you stole, and you found yourself alone, you would be highly motivated to go back and fix the problem that you had created.
In fact, you quote some research that sort of draws a parallel between this, you know, alone in the savannah, this motivation to go back to the group. A contemporary example could be a kid leaving for college for the first time. And there's data on what that actually does to the physiology. Can you give us a little synopsis of that?
Well, some people, there are these key moments in life where you leave the comfort of home or of a trusted environment, and you go into a new environment where you know absolutely no one. And most people are going to simply succeed at making new friends and having new groups of people, but some people won't, whether because they're genetically predisposed to loneliness, and there is some genetic predisposition, or because they never form secure attachments when they were babies or children, and they just aren't good at bonding. And those people put in that stressful situation are going to have these physiological responses, and such as the inflammation that I was talking about, mm-hmm. and the constriction of the arteries. So some of the early work on loneliness came from measurements on these undergraduates. Now, partly because undergraduates are available on campus and these are academic psychologists doing this work, and partly because, you know, it's a very stressful time in life to become an undergraduate. And some of this work was actually done on gay men infected with AIDS, and it was discovered that gay men who were in the closet died faster of the disease. Their latent HIV virus blossomed into AIDS more quickly if they were in the closet. And the theory of that is it's because they were much more sensitive to rejection, which is why they would have been in the closet, and they experienced the stigma associated with being gay and having AIDS much more keenly, and it made them sicker and die faster.
We're talking about the lethality of loneliness. It's the cover story for the New Republic this week, and Judith Shulevitz is with us. She compiled a number of studies and essays and research on loneliness to talk about the real psycho and biological effects of loneliness on human beings. And that's something that I'd love to hear more about, because you talked about, you know, in the cases of children, say a child is born into a household, or in the case of many of the world's children, maybe abandoned by their parents, raised without a sense of connection and care. This can actually rearrange them at a molecular level, their cells and their genes. Now, obviously, things that are harmful to kids, we can legislate against. We can prevent, child abuse or legislate against it. But you can't really legislate human interaction. This has huge implications for early education and care for children. What does it mean for you looking at all this in terms of policy?
In terms of policy, I would say we can legislate for. We can legislate for support from the government, from government agencies, from social agencies, to provide extra preschool. So this has become very political right now. To provide social support for mothers who are single and overwhelmed, and help them be better mothers. Help them create enriching environments, not just cognitively but socially. And one of the people I quote is this Nobel Prize-winning economist named James Heckman, who has gone from, you know, sort of harder quantitative studies to the hard quantitative study of the cost to society of failing to provide these things to the underprivileged who desperately need them, and what it costs in terms of crime, in terms of reduced educational performance, all kinds of things. And his feeling is, and he comes from the University of Chicago, which is a very conservative economic school,
mm-hmm.
and his feeling is we are wasting a lot of money by failing to take these preventative measures of helping kids and families who are stressed and strapped, and they can't provide the parenting they need. They probably wish they could provide, but they're working, you know, or they live in chaotic environments.
Part of the pain of reading this, Judith, is recognizing the lonely nature of the human condition, I think. But secondly, there's a kind of implication of guilt. I mean, Unlike cancer or heart disease, we can do something to help the lonely. Is there any evidence that human connection can reverse any of these effects?
Well, this is the marvelous thing about some of this work that's being done. And you mentioned briefly the genetic component. So what that is that there are these little molecules that hitch on top of genes, and they turn them on and off. And they start doing this from the time that the egg is fertilized, and they keep doing it throughout life. And some of this determines how the body functions, and some of it will determine how the body will develop and grow. And these social experiences produce hormones that affect how these molecules turn genes on and off. And this has enormous implications because it means the brain, the infant brain under horrible social stress, meaning it's not getting the love it needs, will develop differently than the loved brain. And that's extraordinary. But what it does mean is you can reverse it. You can go the other way. So there are these experiments. You've heard of the Romanian orphan.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, there are these experiments that show love an orphan and the brain will return to a more normal state. So that's the wonderful thing about it.
Judith Shulevitz, science editor at The New Republic, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Judith wrote the cover story in The New Republic this week. It's called The Lethality of Loneliness. We do have a link to that. She's also written How Older Parenthood Will Upend American Society and Why Do Grandmothers Exist? We have links to all those at wordofmouthradio.org.